Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Two Legs. This is episode number 244. Wow. I'm Andy Nichols, one of the co-hosts of Two Legs, and joining me, as always, is one of the co-founders of Two Legs and my partner, Mr. Tom Hunyadi. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, Andy. Excited to be back and starting doing another episode of Two Legs. And as you can see, we've got another wonderful guest, and we're going to be talking with her. And
So joining us today, we are very honored and humbled to have SiriusXM's own from the Beatle Channel, Caitlin Larkin, joining us for episode number 244. Hi, Caitlin. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. I am so good. I'm so excited to be here. How are you guys doing tonight?
We are great.
I feel like over the last couple of years, we have connected on many levels at fests between New York and Chicago, and we've been on a couple of panels together. We're all kind of the same age, so it's really nice to kind of connect and talk for real just with us, because I feel like we are simpatico on so many levels with our fandom.
Oh, yeah. For sure. No, it's nice to have other folks, you know, your age that, like, you can really relate to, especially, right. You know, how we grew up with the Beatles kind of being second gen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, Caitlin, if you don't subscribe to Sirius, Caitlin is the host of on SiriusXM every day. She can be heard on the Sirius channel from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. She's always got cool themes, and, you know, if you follow her on Instagram, she'll always say, hey, today I'm going to play this, and I'm going to play this, and she gives you a little bit of a nugget of, you know, some surprises. It's always enjoyable. I always like to see, oh, what's she going to play today? You know, I always like to look and see that.
Gotta get the people's interested. Gotta give them a little tease.
You do, which is always great to see. I'm like, oh, she's like, today we're going to give a play a song that John wrote for Ringo, and I'm like, oh, which one is it going to be?
Exactly, so that's why you got to tune in and find out.
Right. That's
cooking
right.
Well, kitchen love. All right.
Go ahead, Tom. Way to go. Yeah.
I played that the other week.
We have some news items here that we're going to kind of talk about. Three things of note for news. Before we jump into the episode here with Caitlin, I'm going to channel my inner Ken Michaels, but I'm going to be real quick about it. Sadly, it was announced that after 18 years, the Beatles Cirque du Soleil Love Show is closing at the Mirage. Damn.
Yeah. I'm so upset about this news. It broke my heart when I found out.
Have either of you guys seen it? I'm sure you have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it twice, actually. I saw it in 2008. It was actually a Beatle Fest, like, associated thing. Because it opened in 2007, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was, like, the one-year anniversary, and they did a fest in Vegas around it. So you got to go to the fest and go to the Cirque du Soleil show, and that was my graduation from high school present.
Nice.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
And then when my wife and I first started dating, the first trip we ever took together was to Las Vegas, and we went and saw the show together.
Nice.
So,
Tom, you saw it more than once or no?
I saw it twice. I went for my 40th birthday in 2013, and then last year for my 50th birthday. So,
right. So you would just saw it fairly recently.
Yeah. Fairly recently. They made some tweaks from that initial run. It's a very moving. If you haven't seen it yet, you know, you still have a little bit more time.
You do.
To do so. But, you know, I tell you what, that first time, it was so emotionally powerful.
Oh my God.
It really is.
To see this. And, you know, people don't believe when I tell them. I was like, I was literally, tears were running down my eyes while I'm watching this. You know, I found it to be very moving.
Especially at the end of the show. Oh, my God. Like, floodgates open at the end, right?
You know, yeah. And then, you know, going there with my uncle last year, who was, you know, kind of like my inspiration of becoming a Beatles fan, because, you know, he was a Beatles fan in the late 60s and into the 70s. Well, still is. But he was kind of like my teacher. So to have that experience of seeing that show with him, because we had talked about seeing it. When it first came out, we had the Love album. We just loved that, you know, connecting with the Love album, and then finally getting to see it. So, you know, 17 or 18 years later, however long it's been, was awesome. Loved it.
An incredible run. I got to see it myself in 2009. I went with my friends for a trip to Vegas, and I said, "You guys want to go see the Love show?" And they were like, "Nah." I said, "Well, screw it. I'll go by myself," and I did.
Nice.
The Beatles' love has been seen by more than 11.5 million guests since opening in 2006, said the CEO, Stephanie Lefebvre. It's been an honor for us all at Cirque du Soleil to collaborate with the Beatles and Apple on what can only be described as a masterpiece. We're grateful to the creators, cast, crew, and all involved in bringing this show to life. And we know the Beatles' love will live on long after the final bow. Tickets to the final performances through June 29th are available online. And tickets for the final week of performances in July will be available in the coming weeks. So, yeah, that's the end of an era, man. Really is.
Leave it to Hard Rock to ruin something again. Right. Sorry, I'm a disgruntled former Hard Rock employee. Oh. So I'm just like, oh, fair leave enough. It to those turds to ruin something amazing as per usual. Those
right.
guys.
We've just got the Beatles, but we're going to come in and replace them. Good. Nice. Nice move.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, so will you go? Will anybody go see it? Will you guys make one more effort to go see it before it closes, or not feasible? You don't think?
I don't know if it's feasible. Like, in a perfect world, I absolutely would. If the opportunity does come up, I will. But I just don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think two times was good enough.
They also have, if I don't know if you guys have it, there's that All Together Now DVD, which kind of gives you the making of Love and how the show came together. Yeah, I don't know if you have that, Tom. Caitlin, I'm sure she's nodding, so I know she does.
Yeah, I think they sell that in the gift shop. So
yes.
Yeah.
So you, what a magical time that was to hear the Beatles mashed up. I mean, because that was really the first time any of this stuff happened, and it was like such a ear-opening thing to hear all this music intertwined and hearing all of this interwoven, just tremendous.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things. So I got the Love CD when it came out in 2006. Yep. I think it was a Hanukkah gift. And immediately I got the nearest CD player and I put it in and I was just blown away. And I know there are so many Beatles purists out there. And oh man, it's just so good. I that's the only way I can describe it. And I like how in the All Together Now documentary, Ringo's like, no, make it crazier. And I'm like, no, you got to make it even crazier than that. Like, they went too soft on some parts. They should have gone even crazier.
Yeah.
The crazier, the better.
So true. And let us not forget that the brainchild of the show was none other than George Harrison.
George Harrison. Yes. Yep.
So one of his last things he wanted to go see to fruition in his lifetime. So thank you, George, and team for giving us that show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Also in newsworthy, this actually dropped on Forbes. This is an article that was published in Forbes magazine, written by Hugh McIntyre, that said Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr may have another collaboration in the works. Interesting. Mm. And he quoted a post on Instagram from Zach Starkey. And Zach says, around 3 p.m. on the day of The Who and Guns N' Roses show at Rock in Rio, Duff and I went into a local studio and cut bass for a cover of a T-Rex, Children of the Revolution. Original track is by T-Rex and playing on my post. My dad played drums in L.A. while I fudged the bass, and in Rio, Duff cut bass. A couple of weeks after the tour, we cut guitars in New York City with Slash, sent the track with shh guide vocal to Elton, who played amazing piano. Shh went to hang with Axel and said he'd like to sing it. Wow, Axel killed it. Amazing vocals. He's mixing the track now, I believe, and we will auction the record for Teen Cancer without greedy bean counters wanting 75%. Mm. I won't say what label it is, but this is for kids. It's produced by me, and it's a full album with more than one Beatle, a Smith, a Pretender, an Ashcroft, an Iggy, and many more soon come. Wow, what is that?
Don't Sounds know. Awesome.
Anybody heard this yet?
No.
Mm-mm.
That was just published just the other day in Forbes. So a charity single of some sorts that Paul and Ringo and Elton and other people are going to be on. Okay.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, you know, obviously if it was like Beatle related, I'm sure that would have been, you know, heavily guarded and it would have been in Fort Knox and, you know, nobody, I mean, that would have been very hush hush. So, I mean, as a charity single, I mean, yeah, I mean, why not?
Hell, that's an all-star crew. I just, you know, Guns N' Roses working with Paul and Ringo and Elton is an interesting combination. But.
Right. Well, you know, Elton and Axel have that collaboration there on the Freddie Mercury concert, and then obviously Guns N' Roses covered "Live and Let Die." So, you know, there's some connections there.
For sure.
And if you're going to cover, you know, Children of the Revolution, I feel like Axl is the only person who could really get that vocal down, too.
Mm. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And we know Ringo and T-Rex loved each other because Ringo's, you know, love of the word yes. boogaloo. Yes. In so yep. much of those early Ringo tracks, he just nicked from T-Rex and Mark Bolan.
He directed that documentary, that T-Rex documentary as well.
Yeah. And lastly... Awesome. And by the time this actually our episode drops, this event will have already happened because it's happening tomorrow night. We're recording this on Wednesday, April 10th. But tomorrow night, yep. Paul McCartney, amongst a host of many other people, the Eagles, Brandi Carlile, Kenny Chesney, Jon Bon Jovi, are all performing at the Hollywood Bowl in a tribute to Jimmy Buffett called Keep the Party Going, a tribute to Jimmy Buffett. So that's tomorrow night. And one of our fans and viewers and one of our the best mates of all time, Joan Borelli, she's a member of Fans on the Run. She's there at the show.
Yep,
so we're going to hopefully get a rundown on from the show on her at some point, maybe as a special episode, maybe as an episode. But she's there, and we're not surprised she's there, Tom, right?
We are not surprised she's there. I mean, listen, Holly, I've worked there several times as a tour catering chef, and it's a magical place, and concerts there are just fantastic. Everybody's going to have a great time at that show.
Mm. Wish you could go, Caitlin, right?
Oh, hell yeah. That'd be amazing. I've never been over to the Hollywood Bowl, so that'd be, amazing in and of itself.
Pretty historic. I'm guessing there's no live stream option for this show, right? I haven't seen that really promoted anywhere.
I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah. I'm sure some footage will get on YouTube. Some fan footage will make its way on there. Hopefully, like you said, Joan will pop on soon and tell us all about it. And looking forward to it.
Yeah, and is this the precursor for a little warm-up tour for Paul for 2024? We don't know. We just don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We're hoping and crying and waiting and hoping, as they sang on Anthology 1, but right. We don't know.
I feel like it would have been announced already. Look at the ELO. I mean, they announced in there that tour's not until, September, October, so it's, I feel like if he was going to tour, we were already been getting some hints about it and or an announcement.
Yeah. Those UK fans, they are not happy.
No.
That's all I see online is those guys like, when's he going to finally come back here? Cause what he was scheduled to go in 2020, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But that got canceled. Not postponed. It got canceled. So that means it wasn't going to get made up.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel bad for those guys. You know,
same.
I mean, as much as I want Paul just to, stay here and tour the States, it's not fair to those folks over there.
All they got was Glastonbury in June of 2022. And that was it. And that was a hell of a concert. But they're like, where's our tour? Where's our home tour? You live here, man. So that's going to wrap up the news. Nothing too else crazy, but there was a couple of headlines. But jumping in, Caitlin, please tell us about your background. Some of us know because we've been on panels together. But tell us about your introduction to the Beatles, and things like that, and where you started.
Sure. So I always say that I came out of the womb going woo. Sorry, bad joke. No, a Beatles fan since birth. I've told the story a million times, but for anybody who hasn't heard it, basically, if it weren't for the Beatles, I would not have been born. My parents met at a bar in 1975. My dad sees my mom, needs a little liquid courage to go up to her and ask her out on a date. He finally goes up to her and says, "You are the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. Can I please take you out on Saturday?" And my mom's like, "No, bro. I don't know you." And my dad's next line is, "Well, if you knew me, would you go out on a date with me?" And she's like, "No." So my dad, defeated, turns around, walks away, and then at the last second goes back around and goes, "I bet you don't even like the Beatles." My mom goes, "They're my favorite band. Of course I do." So because of the Beatles, I and also my older brother are literally on this earth.
Ah, nice.
That's a good reason to do that.
Yeah. So from there, it was basically just kind of growing up in your typical Beatlemaniac household. I was obsessed with the movie Yellow Submarine by the time I was three. It was something that I was asking to watch every single day. Anytime my parents and my brother and I were on long road trips in the car, my dad had made a Beatles mixtape that was always playing anytime we were in the car. So I just kind of discovered the music organically like that, just on repeat over and over. And I enjoyed it and I loved it. And having that association of the music and the films kind of made me fall in love with them even more. I was like, well, I want to see everything they've ever done. Right. So my dad would play for me A Hard Day's Night, Magical Mystery Tour, Help, even the documentaries, you know, the complete Beatles back in the day. Yep. Imagine John Lennon. Mm-hmm. I was watching these things all the time.
Absorbing them every time and taking something new away from it every time you watched it.
Right. And so by the time I was 4 years old, I could tell you anything and everything about the Beatles.
Right. But did they also incorporate solo stuff as well, or was it just more or less the Beatles?
It was more or less the Beatles until I got a little bit older. My parents were both heavily into Lennon.
Mm.
So that was kind of the only solo music I really knew up until I started doing digging on my own.
Okay.
Yeah, which is so funny that, you know, Paul has become my favorite Beatle.
I was just going to ask you, do you have a favorite one? Because I wasn't sure if you could answer it or not.
So, okay, usually I would give the typical, I can't choose answer. I did that my entire life. And only maybe as of recently in the last year, I've been like, okay, come on, Kate, you know that if you had to like put it, you know, out there, you're making like a playlist of your favorite solo Beatles songs. Who do you have in there predominantly more than the others? And it was always Paul. But honest, you know, if you would have asked me who was my favorite Beatle when I was like five, I would have told you Ringo. I'm a drummer. And he was a huge influence on me. So it was always Ringo, Ringo, Ringo. When I was an angry, angsty teenager, it was all about Lennon. That is all I was doing. I was in my John Lennon phase.
Give me some truth, damn it.
I would just, this is a true story. I would just listen to the song How over and over and just cry.
I'm telling you, when I was 15 in 88 when the Imagine John Lennon movie came out. And I got the soundtrack, I got the book, I went to the theater to see the movie. And then, that song, when I was introduced to that song from that movie. And I was just like, wow. And Lennon was my first, you know, as getting into the solo stuff. It was Lennon at first.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us were of this generation. You know, in our late 30s, early 40s, you know, like that in our 40s, that's where we gravitated toward, because he was such a presence there, you know, 10 years after his passing. There was so much, I mean, a film, the books, the box sets.
Yeah, literally everything was Lennon focused in the 90s. Yep.
In the 80s, in the early 90s, it was very heavy John. So it was it was easy to see why younger impressionable fans like us could get caught up into it, because he was everywhere. Even though he had been gone for years, he was still so present in our lives.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I didn't discover McCartney's solo stuff until Wingspan came out in 2001.
Okay.
And
okay.
I was seeing those commercials everywhere. Yeah, just seeing the Wingspan commercials everywhere. And I was just like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me, that's the one, that Paul, like, I knew that Paul had a solo career and did other things, but I was like, wait a minute, he was in an entirely different band altogether. I had no idea.
Wow.
Because my parents were Lennon heads. They never played McCartney solo stuff except from the McCartney album. So I knew, like, maybe I'm Amazed and stuff like that. Or, you know, you'd hear Coming Up on the radio. So I always knew that Paul had done things. It's just that nobody ever gave it to me and showed it to me. I had to seek it out on my own.
So I have an interesting question for you then. Yeah. Okay. Because you discovered Paul's music around this time. You look at a compilation called Wingspan, and do you think every song on here is a Wing song or not?
I did at the time. You see? I did at the time because I didn't know any better. And it's funny, I've even discussed that on my radio show for some Wednesday Wings segments. I did recently, like 2 weeks ago, I did Hey Diddle.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I was talking about that and I was like, is it wings or is it not? So it's and even with coming up, is it wings or is it not? Because technically
it's both.
Yeah, it's both.
It's both. You know, with like throwing No More Lonely Nights on there or Pipes of Peace. It's like,
yeah,
what are you doing? Like, I'm curious. You must have been like, this is all wings. You must have been like, this is all wings stuff.
I did. I had no clue.
See?
I had no clue. And then as I got into my late 20s, I really started appreciating George Moore. And I think that comes with age. So,
it does. I think so.
Yeah, but if I were to really, like, if somebody's gonna, you know, put a bottle to my head and be like, who's your favorite Beatle? It's McCartney.
Just for the pure fact that there's probably just so much, there's so much to just dive into over across of 54 years of work.
And not even that. I think I'm just really a pop music enthusiast. Mm. Okay. I love pop music. I love up-tempo. I love things with beautiful melodies and harmonies. And Paul just kind of checks all those boxes for me.
For you, yes or no?
No.
I knew we were best buds. I knew it.
Which is funny though, because when you do hear it, it does get stuck in your head.
Yes.
You know, and so I appreciate it for the catchiness factor, but just when I first heard it, I was just like, nah, man, this ain't for me.
Exactly. Did you find yourself as you got older though and getting more mature with your styles and your, like, obviously getting more into George Moore? Going back to Lennon is like such a, he only has a so finite amount of material that, like, while you grew up with it and your parents were bona fide Lennon fans,
yeah,
it's like it holds a weird window in your heart of like the past that, like, you can only go back to it so often because you know it so well.
No, I mean, I feel like I can go back to it anytime, and then I can also appreciate it for what it is now. And it's funny, the Lennon songs that I gravitate towards to mostly now are things like from Milk and Honey. Mm. Nobody Told Me. Why am I blanking? it's a lot. Borrow Time.
Stepping out.
Thank you.
I don't want to face it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to face it. I love that song.
You want to save humanity, but it's people that you just can't stand.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really into my Milk and Honey era right now when it comes to Lennon. But my favorite Lennon solo song of all time has always been Number 9 Dream. I discovered that song when I was in the sixth grade, and I used to just listen to it over and over and over. So definitely more the poppy, you know, stuff is kind of what I've always just gravitated towards musically.
That guitar from Jesse Ed Davies is magical, and I just love that dreamlike, you know, aspect of the song. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's
gorgeous. Put you like in a trance when you listen to that song sometimes.
That I have literally said those words on the air. It really does. It's weird. John Lennon's Number 9 Dream. What else are they? Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes and Roxy Music's More Than This are three songs that anytime I hear them, that's it, I'm done. Like, pray those never come on while I'm driving in the car because I will crash.
And how about, I mean, we haven't touched on it yet, but like your foray into Ringo's solo career, are you like all in? Have you, did you devour his solo career as much as you did the other three, or not really?
I definitely haven't devoured it, but I started, so when I was still making YouTube videos and stuff, I had gotten into it more because I had done a small video series where I was going to review every solo Beatles album in chronological order, and I only maybe got like 3 or 4 albums in at the time, you know. But when I was working on doing that project, I was listening to so much Ringo.
Right.
And then getting the job on Sirius, I have a plethora of things to listen to in our library. And that's when I was kind of listening to Time Takes Time. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is such an amazing album. Like, why aren't people talking about this more? And people, you know, talk a lot of crap about Ringo's rotogravure. I love that record.
That's a great record.
I love that record. Yeah. I played Lady Gay on the show yesterday, and I'm just like, I don't understand why people are sleeping on some of these albums. Right. They're great.
Let's jump into the YouTube factor, because I mean, I know if I had it in the '80s, I mean, that's probably would have been, I probably would have been doing it. Then let's talk about you getting, you know, YouTube channel, making up your mind, saying, this is what I want to do, what you want to talk about. I mean, and did you, and besides your folks, did you have other people around you that liked the Beatles, or did you find that this is what you had to do to make that connection with other people?
So I was always that kid who was the weirdo for listening to old people music growing up. Yeah, I was kind of like the cheese stands alone. I was all by myself in that regard until I got into high school. And that's kind of when my friends started coming around. Actually, no, I'm lying. Even before that, when Beatles 1 came out.
2000.
That was kind of the tipping point. I was in fifth grade at that point. And a lot of my friends' parents had gotten the CD and were playing it in the car. And so I remember a few of my classmates going, hey, you know, some of these songs are actually pretty good. And I'm like, I know I've been telling you this since we were in kindergarten. Where have you been?
Where have you been for the last 10 years? I know that.
And so it kind of started around then. But mostly it was in high school when my friends were kind of really coming around to it. And they're like, you know, I think I want to give the Beatles a try. What should I do? And I was like, here, this is what you're going to do. I have Abbey Road on CD. What you're going to do is you're going to take this home tonight. You're going to put on headphones and you're going to listen to this all the way through without skipping any songs. Come back to me tomorrow and let me know what you think. And I had like a 90% success rate. I only had one friend who was like, I don't like this.
Well, you can't win them all.
Which is so weird because that particular friend is a huge James Taylor fan. And I was just like, I can't comprehend how you can love and be obsessed with James Taylor and not like the Beatles. Right. Anyway, she's weird, but I love her. but yeah, that's kind of how that happened. So it was always mostly family. My entire family on both sides, huge Beatles fans. I would say everybody except for my paternal grandfather were all obsessed with the Beatles. My paternal grandfather, he was mostly into like big band stuff, Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't very into rock and roll, but you know, we definitely got the record collecting gene from him because he loved collecting 78s. And by the time he passed away, he had accumulated over 10,000.
Oh,
whoa.
Yeah. So
that's a collection.
Very big into record collecting. And he definitely passed that down to his children and then, you know, us as grandchildren. So,
of course, carrying that torch and running with it.
Oh, yeah, right. For sure. Music is a big, big part of both sides of my family, whether it be, you know, collecting and listening on my father's side or my mother's side, where my grandparents were the type of people, if you said some random line in conversation, that would trigger a song lyric and then they'd start singing. So music has always been very prevalent in my life.
Oh,
love it. Like it has for a lot of us. And
yeah,
I love that. Caitlin, on your bio on the Sirius' site, it talks about how you had your TikTok account and how it was discovered by Apple. Please tell us about why a TikTok account and the evolution of that.
Yeah, sure. So I guess it all really began like with Tom. We were talking about YouTube. So 2017, I got into, you know, the Beatles YouTube community by seeing guys like, you know, Mean Mr. Mayo, Matt Street, Beatle Brad, making videos. And I was like, wait a minute. I have a massive Beatles collection. Why don't I show it off? So those guys inspired me to get into YouTube. So I started making videos, got myself a little bit of a following.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how I got introduced to you guys through the YouTube community as well. Yeah. And then in 2020, I was hanging out at a friend's house and she was like, have you been on TikTok yet? And I'm like, no, I heard that's mostly for like Gen Z and younger. You know, is that really something that I would want to do? She's like, it's hysterical. I find myself just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling for hours, just looking at, you know, mindless content. And I was like, all right, let me see what this TikTok is all about. So I go on there and I see, you know, the cute little trends or taking people's audio and kind of putting your own spin on it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's really not much Beatles stuff on here. And I was like, I wonder if I could, you know, make Beatles content and if that would go well on here. Within the first week, I made two really dumb videos just like randomly here in my office here. And they went viral. I couldn't believe it. I had taken someone's audio of, it's like, oh, I have my grandparents' original copy of Abbey Road, and this is what happens when I put it on the turntable, and that, Shorty's Got a Melody in my head, that song plays instead of hearing Come Together. Oh. And so I just took my copy of Abbey Road and put it on my turntable, and it got like 300,000 views.
Mm.
And I was just like, wait, really? What? Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I'm having more success on YouTube in a week than I'm having 3 years at that point making YouTube videos.
You mean more success on TikTok than you have YouTube, yes, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so I was like, I think there's something to this here. So I was like, well, what could I do every single day that could be different and engaging? And so I started making On This Day in Beatles History videos so that it was something new every single day. I would put, you know, pictures behind me in the green screen mode and talk about Beatles history. And it was just going viral every single time. And I was just like, okay, this is pretty cool. So I did that for about a year. And I was like, well, am I gonna just start this over again? And to me, that just seemed really boring. And I didn't want to do it again. Because I thought that was kind of a cheap shot. Like, yes, I could keep getting popular and maybe people who didn't see it before would see it now. But I my heart wasn't in it. I just didn't want to do it over again.
Right.
So I was trying to think of other things that I could do. And so I've had a background in radio for a little bit. When I was in college, I was an intern for the South Florida morning show, the KVJ show. I did that for a few months and just always loved radio. Joe Johnson from Beatle Brunch,
yep.
He's a mentor of mine. I met him at that Las Vegas Fest in 2008. And he's always been amazing and giving me tips. And I used to help behind the scenes with social media for Beatle Brunch. And so radio's always been a passion of mine. And in 2018, I got a job in radio locally in Orlando, kind of just doing promotions. And 5 months working in promotions, I was bugging every single DJ that I worked with, picking their brain, learning how the business works and what does this button do. And so 5 months into it, they were like, hey, you want an on-air traffic position? And I was like, really? After 5 months of just being in promotions? Hell yeah, I do.
I'll take it.
So, you know, just doing traffic reports, commercials, weather reports, you know, I didn't care. It was on air. And because of that, that taught me how to edit audio, produce and mix audio. And so when I had learned all of those skills, and that one particular day I'm sitting at work going, what could I do on TikTok? There was a trend going on at the time where this guy was doing a dance to a Lizzo song every single day until she commented.
Mm.
And at this point in time, the Beatles themselves were not on TikTok. So I was like, wait, I wonder if SiriusXM is on TikTok. They had only just made an account like a few months earlier. It was brand new.
Oh.
And I was like, this is it. This is my in. I'm going to make fake Beatles channel breaks every single day until they comment or like it or whatever. Just get acknowledged. So I started doing it. And once again, the magic of TikTok, they went viral. And so it was about 9 days into this little campaign of mine. I get a DM on Twitter from Adam Saltzman, who is the program director of the Beatles channel. And he was like, hey, I love your passion. Would you like to set up a meeting? And I'm just like, wait, what? Set up a meeting? What are you talking about? So he and I had a phone conversation. He's like, I really love what you're doing. And then at this particular point, the Beatles did make a TikTok account. So it was kind of newsworthy that they were on TikTok. And they're like, we would love for you to be able to come on the Fab Forum and tell your story. And I'm like, oh my God, I get to talk to Dennis Elsis. Are you kidding me?
Drop like, the mic.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap, okay, I'll be there. And so with that, they were like, okay, so we want you to go on the Fab Forum and talk about TikTok, but then we want you to do a My Fab Four. Now, right. I want you to think of this not as a normal My Fab Four, because this, he basically said, this is going to be your audition. And I was just like, I'm like crapping my pants. And so he's like, this is basically going to be your audition. We're going to hear what you sound like introducing songs on the air. And usually when they do a My Fab Four, they'll pick a few people and they'll run people, like different fans, through the entire week. They gave me every single My Fab Four time slot to see like how it would do. For each time. And so that was unbelievable to have me come up every so often over that week. And
do you remember what four songs you picked?
Yeah. So I did it kind of chronologically because there's no way that you can really pick four songs. So I kind of just did things that were, you know, biographical to me. So to kind of go through the Yellow Submarine early years, I picked It's All Too Much. I picked 8 days a week because that was the very first song I ever learned on guitar. I picked And I Love Her, and I dedicated that to my wife. And then I had picked It's Only Love because that was a song that I played on stage at the Cavern Club when I went to Liverpool in 2019. So all things that kind of, you know, really meant a lot to me in my life. You know, are they truly my favorite Beatles songs ever? No, not really. I mean, I love them all. But, you know, that's how I was able to choose, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So they have me do the My Fab Four. It goes really well. And a week or two later, I get a text from Adam, the program director. And he's like, hey, do you have a minute to hop on a Zoom call with me, Vice President Lou Simon, and Jeff Jones from Apple? And I was just like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm like, yeah, I'm dropping everything I'm doing. I'll be right there. So I wish that they had recorded this, because I wish I could have had this for the rest of my life. So yeah. I'm sitting in the seat exactly where I am right now, here in my studio, in my office. Pulled up the laptop just like I have it here. And so I go to click on this meeting and I'm like sweating profusely and thinking that, oh, maybe, you know, maybe Adam will be the first person that's in the room, or maybe I'll be the first person that's in the Zoom room. I open it and it's Jeff Jones.
Of course.
And I'm dying. Like, Jeff Jones can see my Beatle room. Like, what the hell is happening here?
And what were those few seconds like while you're waiting for other people to enter the room?
Nerve-wracking. Absolutely nerve-wracking. You know, just kind of doing the basic small talk. Oh, where are you based out of? Where are you from? Where do you live? You know, stuff like that. And then, of course, you know, the meeting starts. And, you know, they honestly, guys, this was like 2.5 years ago. So I wish I could remember every single thing, which is why I said I wish that they recorded this, because it was...
I mean, but like they basically offered you on the spot, right?
Pretty much. They gave me a good long little spiel, you know, talking me up about, you know, how they really appreciate my, you know, commitment and, you know, my energy and stuff like that. And then Jeff Jones, he turned to the camera and he said, "We'd like to welcome you to the family." Oh. And I lost my mind and I cried my eyes out.
Oh, I bet.
He said, "Welcome to the family." And if you would have told 4-year-old Caitlin that she would actually be, in a way, working for the Beatles. It's unbelievable. I still don't believe it to this day. I really don't. It blows my mind. Funny, right here on my desk, I actually have this year's company Christmas card. It's season's greetings from Apple.
From Apple.
Now from and Apple. Then. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like signed by the, you know, the whole team at Apple. It's an official, you know, company Christmas card. Like, you know, I can't believe
you did it. Magical.
Yeah.
I mean, you must be like sometimes like, is this real? Did this really happen to me?
I don't believe it's real. I don't at all. And I record my show and I talk about the Beatles and I'm like, I'd be doing this anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing this on YouTube. I was doing this on TikTok. And before that, I was giving Beatles VIP tours for Hard Rock Cafe for 9 years. I've been talking about the Beatles for a really, really, really long time. And to be like, oh, you're on a nationally syndicated satellite radio station and people all over the country and in Canada hear you every day. I'm like, no, it's just my mom that's listening. Nobody else listens.
as Paul's saying, you never know who may be listening to you.
Yeah.
And your parents must have been so proud of you, though. I mean, to come full circle. I mean, my God.
Yeah. I mean, you guys met my mom at the fest
that was great.
Yeah. You know, she's just like, watching my Beatle girl go. That's what she always says. Go, my Beatle girl, go.
So you started at the end of 2020 on the channel, or was it? When did you start in 2020?
I started in 2022, January 2022.
2022 is when you started. Yeah. So it was after the pandemic. So you've been on the channel for just a little over 2 years now.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's talk about putting a show together.
Sure.
Let's talk about, and then, you know, how that came to be, and do you put a lot of work in, you know, put homework in? So obviously we don't know everything. Talk about, you know, your research and how you put your show together.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So it really is a collaborative effort between myself and my program director, because I am literally just one measly hour. So I have to be sure that I'm not stepping on any of Chris Carter's toes, or if we have any specialty programming after me, like if there's a Way Beyond Compare with Frangione, mm-hmm. or if there's Dark Horse Radio with Laura Cantrell, or an Across the Universe with Dennis Elsis, we have to be mindful of not playing things that maybe they'll play on those shows that day, or anything that Meg Griffin's got going on later in the day. There's got to be space. So, you know, got to just be mindful of things like that. So basically, my program director will give me kind of like a little playlist, if you will, and kind of map out like, okay, you're going to have a couple songs here, then you're going to talk here, and then there's going to be a couple of other songs here, and you're going to talk here. And then he kind of gives me a list to kind of go through. And there are a lot of rules that we have to abide by. And so there are people that will email all the time, well, why aren't you playing this? Or why can't you play this? Or why can't you do this? Or why can't you play these songs? Why you're hearing what you're hearing. And so every hour we have to play a solo song from each Beatle. You will always hear a solo John, Paul, George, and Ringo. Mm-hmm. You will also hear an influence. And you will hear a cover every single hour. So we have to abide by those guidelines.
Right. Yep.
And basically, that's kind of just how we all put it together. And if there's a special anniversary or a celebrity birthday, like, or an album anniversary. I try and put all of those things kind of in together and make a cohesive 1 hour show about it.
Cause it goes so fast. I mean, the hour just flies by.
Yeah, it does. For sure. Now, a lot of people email me and they're like, Caitlin, why do you get only 1 hour? And I'm like, I don't know. That's what I was given. So, you know,
what you got to do now? Now you got to do TikTok videos saying you want more than 1 hour.
Look, I'm just blessed to have a job, man.
Yeah, hey, you, if it was 30 minutes, you'd take it. I mean, come on. I mean,
if it was five minutes, I would take it.
That's awesome.
Introduce one song, I would take it.
Do you get to pick the songs, though, or is it your program director does?
It's a collaborative effort. So if he gives me an outline and I can kind of take things out and put things in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you do that like the day of the show, the night before?
It's usually like a couple of days before he'll give me the initial rundown, but then I can change it as it goes. And I don't do anything really until the morning of. So the morning of is when I do my prep. So usually I get up at like 7:30 in the morning. I'm here at my desk working by 8 o'clock. So from 8 to by the time, you know, the show I air at noon, I'm working.
Because Chris goes till what, 11 or 11:30?
11.
Right, so then you have, and then you come on at 12, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, so I wake up that morning. I make sure that everything is prepped. Everything's in our computer system, ready to go. I have, you know, what I want to talk about. Is there new Beatles news that, you know, happened? And, you know, is everything going according to where it's supposed to be? And then, bam, noon. There I am.
That's great. Caitlin, have you had a chance to actually physically meet and interact with other hosts, like a Peter Asher or any of those people?
Only recently at the fest.
At the fest.
At the fest back in February. That was the first time I met my boss in person.
Really?
Yes. After 2 years, finally meeting him in person. So Sirius is based in New York. That's where the main headquarters is. But of course, they have, you know, studios all over the country. They have one. The closest to me is down in Miami, which only just opened a couple of months ago. Howard Stern did the first few shows over there. They have, you know, a studio at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have one out in L.A. They have studios all over the country. But I'm based. I live here in Orlando, Florida. So I work from here. You're seeing SiriusXM right now. this is where I work out of. And the only time I met Frangione for the first time, at least according to my knowledge, at the fest in 2014. I played Name That Tune and he was the host. So, you know, he and I guess, go a ways back. But I met my boss, Adam, at the fest. And then I met David Frick at the fest, because we did the SiriusXM Beatles Channel panel at the fest.
Right. Yes, you did.
Yeah, and that's basically been it.
You can do the show anywhere you want now in the world and work with people and do things. Yeah. And you're like, hey, nice to meet you in person.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. No, I joke all the time in our office emails about having a staff party. Like, when are we all going to get together and have, you know, the Beatles Channel, like, Christmas party?
Right. Like, you know, we're going to recreate the old Apple Christmas parties back in the day in the 60s.
Hell yeah. Let's get schwasted. No.
No.
No, but that would be amazing. And I mean, I may be a little biased, but I think, you know, Florida has a good draw to it. And especially at the Hard Rock here in Orlando, where I used to work, has the VIP John Lennon room. That's the perfect place for, you know, a Beatles party.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Cool. All right, so moving on to something a little more recently, and I'm just dying to hear what it was like to be a part of Sirius when Now and Then was dropping. Tell us about that experience.
How far in advance did you know it was coming?
I didn't. So the crappy thing about being away from the headquarters in New York is that basically I missed everything. And so I'm sure you guys heard that there were, you know, listening parties for Now and Then before it dropped.
Yes, a few and of our collaborators were at that. Yeah.
Right. Yep. And so, as you know, all those guys had to sign NDAs.
Yep.
So my boss couldn't even tell me that he had heard a new Beatles song or anything like that because he had to sign an NDA. So I was really out of the loop. I didn't find out until the public found out.
Mm.
Yeah, which was crazy. But the morning that the song dropped, so I knew that Chris Carter was going to premiere it, right?
Right.
And I was going to play it second.
Oh.
So I got up very early that morning to see if the song was in our computer system.
Oh, you did?
Maybe was I should it? Be telling the story, but it's fine. It happened already. Yeah. Yes. And so I got up at the butt crack of dawn because the song was supposed to premiere at 10 a.m.
Right.
And I think I came to my laptop here at like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was
there
in the system.
There it was.
So I sat here, headphones on, heard it for the first time, and cried my eyes out. Just started sobbing.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just an unbelievable moment. So Chris played it at 10. I literally played it 2 hours later. It was the first song I played that day.
I mean, how incredibly awesome is that? You are a DJ on the Beatles channel playing a new song the day it freaking drops.
Andy, once again, if you would have told me.
Yeah.
If you would have told me, like, not only, like you said, am I on the official channel for the Beatles, but to be able to say, here's the latest single by the Beatles. That is not a sentence I ever thought I would say in my entire life.
In your life.
Ever.
In your life. And you got to do it.
I got to do it.
And I still
introduce it that way. I'm like, here's the latest single from the Beatles.
Yeah. As like, you should.
What the hell? No, but that may be the biggest career highlight so far in my 2 years at Sirius.
Oh, yeah.
But before that, it was when they sent me to the Rock Hall to cover the Get Back to Let It Be exhibit.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was an unbelievable experience. I got to meet, you know, Jeff Jones in person. I got to interview Glenn Johns. You know, that was an unbelievable experience. But just to be able to say, hey, I've got the new Beatles song right here. And here it is now on the Beatles channel.
I mean, and then the buzz amongst all the hosts. I mean, you all just must have been so, you know, just elated and talking and going back and forth, calls, FaceTimes, emails. Just the station must have just been off the charts.
The funny thing is,
and everything else.
It was kind of the opposite. We were all just kind of like dumbfounded. Like, we could not believe that this was happening.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It was just kind of like, holy crap, here it is. Here we go. You know? Here we go. Here it is. It's happening. It's happening. It's really happening. Yeah, but it will be something I will never forget in my life. And then I've had people come up to me since then saying, I didn't listen to the 10 o'clock showing. I wanted to hear you introduce it.
Yeah, okay. They waited. So
you then now you're a millennial, right?
Yeah. Born in 89.
Okay, so then your parents were probably what, Gen Xers or early or late boomers?
No, they're boomers.
Okay, so then tell us, you know, their thoughts on the new song.
You know what,
do they consider that canon?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
At least I know my mom does. You know what? I don't really know my dad's thoughts on it. I'll have to ask him about that. But no, my mom definitely. Yeah, it's canon. It's so funny. So when the documentary, the 12-minute documentary came out the night before,
yeah,
I was like, Mom, you have to watch this right now. And I made her FaceTime me so I could see her reaction to watching it. And just the tears were a-flowing.
Yeah.
So,
I bet.
No. Oh, yeah. No, she's and then, pro now and then. So.
And then the video, I mean, I'm sure you were sobbing watching the video.
Oh my, that I put on TikTok. I put my reaction to watching the video on TikTok where I'm literally just crying my eyes out. Do I think Peter Jackson went a little cray cray with some of the stuff, maybe just a smidgen. But nothing will beat that first experience of just watching it and being like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, and Andy, you and I have talked about this before. It reminds you of what it was like in 1995 with the 100%. Anthology, 100%. which that was the first thing in our lifetime to be such a huge Beatles
and new
global and moment. Like, holy crap, new Beatles. Like,
and to think that 28 years later, we were going to get that same feeling again. We never thought that was going to happen again.
Never thought it was going to happen.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Now, how many editions of the vinyl did you get between the 7-inch and the 12-inch thing? Did you get them all?
I got three of them. So I got the blue and white marble. I got the Target one.
Yeah.
And I got the cassette.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Excellent. Amazing. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, what a time to be there. Shifting it now towards our two legs, our guy, Paul. Kaylin, please tell us your top 10 all-time favorite Paul/Wing songs.
If you can. Or right now, you know.
This was so damn hard, you guys. So I would just like to say for the record that all the like basic hits, of course, I love. You know, your Band on the Run, your Jet,
right.
My Love, Maybe I'm Amazed. You know, those are things that I absolutely love and adore. I did a top 12. Is that okay?
Yes.
I couldn't knock these songs off.
Are you one of those people that do have like a bona fide favorite McCartney song? Can you like say what you're like when somebody says right now, right in front of you, what is your favorite McCartney song without answering, but could you do that at any point in time?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you know. Okay, good. Okay. But go ahead. Please continue.
It's Silly Love Songs.
Okay.
And it goes back to discovering Wings for the first time and hearing Wingspan. And I couldn't believe that there was such a beautiful piece of music out there that I hadn't heard. I couldn't believe it. And it's one of his most popular songs, and I had no clue about it. The bass line, the horns, the strings, and of course my favorite part that I've said a million times on my show is that three-part
harmony.
Chorale at the end.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
It gives me goosey bumps every time I hear it. I will defend Silly Love Songs till the end. I will die on that hill.
Love it.
Okay, so without further ado, my top 12 because I couldn't get it down to 10.
Go.
And in no particular order, by the way, because that would have been a whole other mess. I wouldn't have been able to do that.
It would have stressed you out.
Oh, yeah, totally stressed me out. So in no particular order, my top 12 favorite McCartney songs. Silly Love Songs, Bluebird, Smile Away, Eat at Home,
wow.
No More Lonely Nights, So Bad, Getting Closer, Listen to What the Man Said, Fine Line, My Brave Face, Happy With You, and Hey Diddle.
Okay. Hey Diddle. Very diverse, very across the 80s, 70s, a little 2005 from Chaos. Hey, Happy With You from Egypt Station. Good pull.
I love Happy With You. When I started, when I heard that, I had to immediately pick up my guitar and figure out how to play it.
Yeah.
Because it's so gorgeous. It's so simple, but that's what I love about McCartney. It's so simple. It's beautiful. His melodies are just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And just that beautiful pop sensibility.
You have like that track that nobody else loves besides Silly Love Songs. I mean, Silly Love Songs, I think is pretty much loved for the most part. But do you have like that one song where it's like, well, I don't know if I should want everybody to know that this is one of the songs that I love.
I don't know. I mean, all the ones that I have listed here are really the ones that like anytime it comes on like on shuffle, right. are the ones that I'm turning up and, you know, listening to and screaming at the top of my lungs. When No More Lonely Nights comes on, I do those background vocals like it's no one's business. Na, 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 na. Like, that's my favorite.
That's it, girl.
Yeah, I love that so much.
Right, so now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, crap. Okay.
What is your favorite Paul album, start to finish?
I can't say Wingspan.
No, that does not count.
Damn it.
I should say, what's your favorite Paul album today? Because it changes all the time.
It always changes.
Yeah.
If you have to do like from Ram, it has to be Ram.
Okay.
Ram and Band on the Run are like everything to me.
Perfect. Perfect.
Sorry
perfect.
For my cat. I hope
I see. We have a cameo. We have a cameo for those of the watching the video version.
That's Lucy. It's her dinner time.
Hello, Lucy.
Yeah. So sorry if you hear my kitty crunching back there. She's having her dinner. But yeah, no, it'd have to be Ram.
Awesome. Caitlin,
have you read the McCartney Legacy? I'm curious.
No, I have not. So I'll be completely honest with you guys. I hate to read. I hate reading. I'm the type of person that I usually like to get my information visually. So if there's like a documentary or a YouTube video or a biopic, like that's usually how I kind of gather all my information. I have like the worst attention span in the entire world, and reading, I'm just like, but I would.
Well, I mean,
make a movie about it.
Well, there's going to be a documentary coming out at the end of 2024 called Man on the Run.
I'm so excited.
Working title called Man on the Run. And we think the end of 2024, but that it will basically kind of give you a lot of what's in that book since you're not since you don't like to read, but
is that horrible to admit? Like that is pretty horrible to admit. I hate reading and people send me books all the time.
And you're like, this is nice. It's a nice cover, nice pictures, but I'm not going to read it. Honey. No, you're honest. And that's the great thing about it. It's not, you're not into it, which is fine.
Yeah. No, not
which
a
is
reader.
Totally fine.
But no, I am excited for the possible Man on the Run because I watch the Wingspan documentary all the time.
Yeah.
I think I just watched it a few weeks ago. I'll watch it like twice a year.
Over under 10 on the next McCartney record, how many different color vinyls will have? Over under 10.
Over, always over.
Oh yeah,
always
over.
Over,
over always. 10.
You should see how many copies of Egypt Station and McCartney 3 and McCartney 3 Imagined I have back here.
20.
Probably
20, right there. If I had to guess, for sure.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, really.
Oh yeah, bring it on, bring it.
Well, did you get the 3-year anniversary one? And which one did you get?
I didn't.
No. Oh, you didn't go for that one.
No, I didn't go for that one. Yeah. I couldn't at that point.
No. Caitlin, tell us about your schedule at Sirius, where people can find you, your social medias and all and
sure,
the like. And
yeah.
All that good stuff.
Man, I am all over the place. But first of all, you can hear my shows weekdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, channel 18 on the Beatles channel, Monday through Friday. You can always send me an email if you ever have any requests, things you want to hear. If you want to keep it Paul specific, every Wednesday, I do Wednesday Wings to end my show. It's my favorite little weekly tradition where I'll play like a very cool Wings rarity. You know, the stuff you basically won't hear, you know, throughout the day, you know.
Right.
And so you can always send me an email, BeatleKate, C-A-I-T, at SiriusXM.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Caitlin Larkin. Then on Instagram, Caitlin Larkin 089. And then I also have a little Facebook fan page thing where it's just simply my name, Caitlin Larkin. And you can reach out to me on any of those social media platforms. I'm addicted to my phone. I am a millennial. I will respond to you.
Love it. Love it. Thomas, what's cooking in the fire for Talk More Talk in the Gang?
Well, as everybody knows that watched, we did part one of our look at the Rob Sheffield 100, or his version of his 100.
Can I speak on that, by the way?
Yeah,
how
please.
How Bluebird is 88 on that list? I cannot forgive that man. If I ever see him on the street,
talk about it. It's,
I'm gonna flick him in the nose.
I look at it this way. At least he acknowledges it as one of the 100 greatest. You know, I look at it that way. At least,
at least it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, you guys. Whatever. Shouldn't be that low.
Anyways. So we're going to be doing part two where we look at 50 to number one, and that'll be a lot of fun. And we had a great time doing that first part, and we're going to have a great time doing the second part. So that's that. I'm sure on the next episode after that, we'll take a look at the new Ringo EP. We'll do our review on that. And
it's called Crooked Boy, right?
I think that's what it's called. Yeah. And then it's always fun reviewing new music, whether it's from Paul or Ringo or any of the back catalog stuff that comes out from John George or from Paul. You know, we have a great time reviewing that, especially if there's something that we haven't heard before, like It's Not On from the Pipes of Peace box. You know, how exciting was that to hear that for the first time? It's like,
where has it been sitting on this thing for 35 years? Yeah. Come on.
Man, the stuff that man must have in his vault.
Right? Right? Yeah.
Release. Release.
Just give us everything.
Right. So, as we said before, we're really getting close to that 2K subs on our YouTube channel. So please hit the like button, hit the subscribe button if you haven't yet already. We really appreciate everybody checking out our show, and we love having wonderful guests like Caitlin Larkland to present to everybody out there to watch and hear her story. And exactly. So
excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All good things. Well, Caitlin, come hella high water, we got to get you to Chicago, gal. Come on.
Man, yeah, I really hope so. And if not Chicago, then definitely New York.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Sure. But, we will talk before then, and hopefully we can make it happen. Because, man, you are an asset to the Beatle community. You're the Beatle family, man. We got to get you out there. And it's been an honor to have you on Two Legs. God, it was, we could talk forever. And thank you for your time. Could.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for having me, you guys. It's such a pleasure. Yeah. I love talking McCartney with you anytime you want to.
Right.
Excellent. Well, for Kate, for Tom, I'm Andy. We will see you next time on the next episode of Two Legs. Have a good night. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.